unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Oh, we still didn't peak, so that's good.
Welcome to Unwarranted Music Opinions, where three people with wildly different musical ideas force each other to listen to albums, then a week later, join together and hope that we won't end up strangling each other. I'm Jacob Lindberg, and I'm with Brian Courtney.
Hello.
And Chaz Jenkins.
Hey, Brian's eating DQ.
I'm eating.
This is terrible. Terrible podcast etiquette, Brian.
Just don't eat into the mic.
Due to the quality of the recording studio that we are in, you'll most likely hear the bits of hot dog between my molars.
Oh my god.
So this week is not a themed episode. We've just chosen albums that we want to talk about, and we're going to start with yours, Chaz.
About the band, I'm really only familiar with this one album, but it's an album that I'm very quite fond of.
Are these guys obscure?
They're known in the whole indie scene.
If you think of synth pop, this is one of the bands to turn to.
I think that 69 Love Songs is a very well-regarded
That's
album.
Like their most well-known album. Yeah. But this is the Magnetic Fields and their 1995 release, I believe, mm-hmm. Get Lost. To give you some context of how I figured out about this band and this song, as a freshman year, FYE, or FYE, what is it? Like the freshman year...
Does it matter?
Yeah, for a freshman year class, I picked one that was like rock and roll history or something. I was like, that'll be fun. The professor who, just think of like
Professor Lane Nieper?
Yep.
I wish I would have taken his class. I had him in English and I got his Pavement reference on the first day and we had like this connection.
What was the main course he taught? Did he teach social studies?
He's an English professor.
Our social
he actually introduced me to Minutemen, but this is a total tangent.
Yeah. But he introduced me to this band because he played one of their songs, All the Umbrellas in London, which we'll get into because that's a very important song. I really love this album. Let's talk about it.
So I think sonically, I would describe this as like indie synth pop. I think that the sound that they were going for here, this very almost kind of lo-fi, mm-hmm. cheap synths, cheap drum machines, distorted kind of shoegazy guitars.
A little bit like cello intermix from here.
Yeah,
here
it's
then.
A sound that is really popular today, to be honest. Like got this bedroom aesthetic that maybe back in 1995 wasn't all the rage. But nowadays, I think there's a lot of bands that are coming out with songs and albums that sound really similar to this. But I would say that the Magnetic Fields on this album, this is the first full-length Magnetic Fields album I've heard, their songwriting ability is leagues, I feel like, ahead of the stuff that was influenced by this.
Well, I want to get into lyrics like later. I really want to talk about the sound first, but like lyrically, these guys kill. And there's a few songs where like it is some of the best songwriting I've heard. Period.
I think there's some really cute metaphors and various artsy comparisons on this album. That was the strongest thing lyrically to me. Songwriting, yeah, I agree. The songwriting's pretty strong. While the structure is basic, I think that the way that the song progresses from verse to chorus is usually interesting. It's not terribly long. It feels a little longer than it is, in my opinion.
I think so?
I think it runs a little long. The album is a little long-winded. I have a couple of complaints about it, but that being one of them. But as far as instrumentation goes, sometimes the lo-fi aspects of this album, what I felt was lo-fi, or maybe...
just kind of cheap sounding. It sounds like it was my...
Yeah, if I had to give a critique, like...
That doesn't always work on this album.
If I had to give a critique, the biggest problem production-wise is that it's hard to hear the lead singer a lot of times.
I totally get what you guys are saying, and I would actually... I was anticipating coming into this conversation with those complaints, and to be honest, I kind of struggled at first with this album.
Me too.
Really getting into it.
Me too.
But
really? I was not expecting that.
I had my fifth listen of it this morning because
I did five
despite
as well.
The fact that I was having trouble with it, there were always a few songs on this album, Famous being one.
Amazing opening.
Another track, obviously, you mentioned All the Umbrellas in London. Which
the
is,
best track in the album, I think.
The best track on the album also.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Those two tracks were kind of bringing me back to it, and I just kept feeling, I wish I liked this more than I do.
Really?
So I kept coming back to it, and this morning, was actually the listen, the fifth listen, where it finally clicked, and my issues with the production, I actually think that the lo-fi sound and the cheapness of it lends itself to this feelings of isolation and sadness on this album, whereas before I kind of felt like, man, I wish that the synths and the drum machines were punchier. They kind of feel a little distant. But now, like, after sitting and listening to it and giving it some detailed listens,
it's one of those every
it grows on you.
It's one of those every choice made was on purpose. Like, you could tell when they're in the studio, it's like, I'm sure the studio head was like, hey, we have a pristine studio here if you guys want to use it. And he's like, no, I want to make sure this is as raw and cheap as it can get.
Right.
Like, every choice the lead singer or the head
Stephen Merritt.
Yes. Every choice was made on purpose. I don't think there's a single moment in this that wasn't, like, purposeful.
I would agree with that, I think.
Looking through, I really do like All the Umbrellas in London, but personally, favorite song? For near the beginning of the track list, I feel like the album is its strongest, coming right out of the gate. I really enjoyed Don't Look Away. I really enjoyed Famous.
Don't Look Away might be my least favorite song on the album.
Did really enjoy it?
I liked it.
Right.
I don't think there's a single song on this album that's bad. It didn't stick with me too much. It was kind of a weird change of pace. It was kind of these weird, like, folky kind of...
Oh, I love the little, like, cello that comes in and the way the guitars work. Like, obviously, the main thing is the synths, which I think is masterful. There's some phenomenal synth work here, and which is why, like, I think these are one of, like, when you think of synth pop, this is the band to go to.
I'd say All the Umbrellas is in, like, my top three.
It's a different
album.
Kind of
The
synth.
Desperate Things You Made Me Do is a really good song.
I wouldn't recommend this to, like... You know, if your idea of synth pop is like Depeche Mode, this is very different.
This is depressed mode.
This is still synth pop, but it's not like typical synth pop.
Not at all.
It takes a unique spin on it.
It's not hi-fi. It's indie synth.
It's not like upbeat.
I think what's interesting is like there's this running theme of the moon.
Yeah,
there's like many songs with moon in the title
and like oceans.
Yeah, very. I think. When you think of, when you said isolation, I guess it's the idea of like on the moon, you're alone.
Maybe so.
This is definitely a breakup album. Like it is explicitly a breakup
album.
Yeah,
this is these. That's my issue with the song.
But it doesn't like hit you over the head. Like hey, listen a few times.
It's deep in the throes of the depression and denial phase of a loss.
Right.
It is absolutely a wallowing album.
It's bitter. You know what I mean?
It's very,
very bitter.
And sometimes it's a little off-putting, but at the same time, like...
I like how happy it can be sometimes with that. I'm a huge sucker for happy-sounding music with incredibly depressing lyrics. I'm a huge sucker for that.
The thing, my least... Like, one of my least favorite tracks, it falls towards the middle here. There's a huge lull on this album for me. Probably right after the track Why I Cry, or maybe...
Yeah.
That's another one that's not my favorite.
Why I Cry, maybe even Save a Secret for the Moon, which is a pretty good track.
See, the
like,
thing
that,
is, like...
Love is Lighter Than Air is that nice love rising through the white snow. I love
and
that.
And the jangly guitars on that.
Yeah.
There's not a single least favorite track at all, but I can totally see why you guys
the
would not
the
like these tracks.
Is super hard to get through for me. Like, after Why I Cry into Love is Lighter Than Air... Around Save a Secret for the Moon to When You're Old and Lonely, or maybe even all the way down to The Village is the Morning, like that, like near the end, maybe from the late middle.
My favorite chorus on the album is probably The Village in the Morning. It's more rock.
Mine is Desperate Things You Made Me Do. Like
that's probably my favorite song.
I love that. I'd like to beat you black and blue. Like,
yeah, that's
I just
really
love how.
What do you think about the ukulele ballad With Whom to Dance?
Love it.
I think
track.
It's a great change of pace.
There's a lot of great like instrumentation here.
It's a move on moment as well, because I think the problem with this album is because it's in a very bitter stage. Sometimes it becomes overly indulgent.
I really dig how
like When You're Old and Lonely is like it's. I understand what he's conveying here, the art I get, but like for me when I listen to this track, this is too self indulgent almost for me. Like the
I
way he's
that.
Talking about, I'm kind of like, well, I mean. You know, at this point, up to this point, the breakup sounded mutual and kind of heartbreaking, but now, like, this blame doesn't translate well to the track, I don't think.
I would agree with that. I do think that...
It seems a little too bitter. It's kind of
It's very bitter, isn't it?
You know what I mean?
It's hard to wrap your mind around, because at one point you're like, well,
This person that he's singing about must have been really
Then again, the
him.
Desperate Things You Made Me Do kind of alludes to that song.
Yeah. I think it's hard to wrap your mind around the bitterness on this album, because part of it, it feels genuine. It definitely doesn't feel inauthentic, but at the same time,
I'd love to be the fly on the wall when he was going through this relationship.
Well, I think we are on this album. I just don't think it's always totally interesting. And I don't think the sounds always complement what's going on. I wish we had a few more ballads, or something to break up the general density of this album, sonically.
This is so interesting. I was not expecting these opinions from you guys with this release. Like,
I had very similar complaints to you, Brian.
I got past them very hard.
I'm very intrigued by this turn of events.
My first listen was really hard. I absolutely was not into it. Well, I will say the opener and the second track, like the first four tracks really do.
Our first episode was a fluke. Like, my first pick you loved, but like every pick from here on out has been like, man, I'm just not.
I like this
first
release.
Listen was a.
I like this release. I'll come back to tracks like Famous, Desperate Things, All
Famous
the Umbrellas.
Is great.
The closer is not something I'm totally into.
I think the closer is a good mood exit.
With Whom to Dance, I'll probably come back to.
It's
nice
very
little.
Beautiful. I like...
Some of the beats on here are really nice as well. I do give this album a lot of credit because it's catchy. It's mostly... It's pretty...
It's definitely
it's
an
consistent
influencer
in the songwriting. It's just that sometimes the subject matter becomes too self-indulgent or feels a little worn out towards the tail end of the album. And I struggle through about
songs. I think that's a running theme with all music, that if you're going to make an album that's purely about relationships, you're going to... cut off some of your audience because not everybody's going through that.
Well,
so
I wish you just explored more emotions there.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. That's a
so like it is pretty
so
when you're coming in, it's like, I'm not going through anything you're talking about, so all
right.
That stuff is just music-wise, and if you don't like the music, then this album is
I honestly
great.
Think that's part of the reason why my favorite track is All the Umbrellas in London, because it's not really explicitly about a relationship. It's just about
his feeling kind of
directionless.
There are a couple of tracks like that on it where he's more referencing his... his depression and the relationship.
Like,
itself.
The depression is because of the relationship, but I'm just singing about the depression aspect,
not
the relationship aspect.
There's a, oh man, on Don't Look Away, when he's, that. I think that track is incredible. I can't believe you don't like that track.
I like it. I don't dislike it.
Well, I understand,
but
like,
but it's not one
I adore that track lyrically, what is said on there. He's alluding to, it's this infatuation, a feeling that I have always, like, been fascinated with, that immediate interest and almost obsession with something, just from a cursory glance, and it takes that and is, you know, he's like, I can relate to this from a specific, when I'd been with a girl for a very long time, and when we broke up, and then sometimes there would be just a random girl on campus. There's one in particular that I still recognize to this day, and I'm just completely infatuated with them, and it's like, I want to, like, you know, get to know them better, just based on their, their appearance, essentially. And when he's talking about don't look away, please don't look away, it makes me feel better to see you, I understand that. And I think it's and when he says that, it's so poignant, because I feel like this is an emotion that most people don't explore. You put it off as there's no love at first sight or anything like that. And you know, I'm not dismissing that notion, but I think that notion itself is dismissive of infatuation, which I think is a fantastic
emotion. You can just feel the influence that this album has made and...
I agree.
A lot of music that's come out today.
You
hit it right on the nail that, like, a lot of music out today,
a lot of bedroom pop sounds very similar to this.
I'm sure,
like,
people hear this band all the time and don't know who they are. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. This is like a classic band where it's like, you see someone with a t-shirt that says the Magnetic Fields and they haven't heard.
They have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, they just know, or they know like three.
You know, you're like, have you heard of the Magnetic Fields? They're like, no, I've never heard of them. You show them a song, they're like, wait, I know this song. Which has happened to me with a couple of artists.
Honestly, that's little tangent here, but like, that's some of the easiest way to get into music. You just hear the name, but like,
just look at the band name. Yeah,
yeah. And
not
then,
to go off, yeah,
just wait for people to bring the music to you.
I like this album a lot, but I think there's like three tracks towards the end that I struggle through, because at that point I feel like the album has said everything it's gonna say, and I don't feel like the closer does anything to wrap up the ideas.
I'll agree. I think All the Umbrellas in London should have been the closer.
Like,
I love how that drum beat's like, do da da do.
It's the danciest beat on the whole album for the saddest song.
And that's what a perfect way to end your synth pop album.
There's just a missed opportunity there. Kind of hang on at the end, you know what I mean? And I think some of the sounds don't always work out here, in my opinion. You know, some of the, when you're talking about distant, I think sometimes it's the mix is too noisy, and I can't latch on any one instrument. It doesn't come together in a way that very much pleases my ear. The songwriting is
I would say
the lyrics are really solid.
Oh, great.
The vocals
singer.
Really, really.
The vocals are good. I don't really. Does he sound like Ariel Pink?
Or does Ariel Pink sound like him?
Ah. goes and it goes and it goes. I'm feeling like a strong 6 or like 7 on this one. Ooh. I teeter. I do like this thing, but if I had to pick between 6 or 7, I'm probably going to go 6. Just because this thing all the way through is a little taxing towards the end, in my opinion. But I think there's some really good ideas on here that are fleshed out. And the songwriting is undeniable.
I thought I was going to come in here and say 7, but I'm going to go with an 8. Because listening to it this morning, like all of the issues that I had, which were very, very similar to what Brian had, the mixing and the fact that the lyrics are very one note at times. I don't know. I sat down and listened to it today, and I just really enjoyed this thing from front to back. Like, I really understood what they were going for. I thought that the sound really, really worked. The lyrics, I don't know, like, this thing is pretty fantastic. The songwriting, the vocals, everything just comes together and makes for a really, really pleasant album with more depth to it than you might think at first.
I agree.
So I'm thinking an 8.
I agree it's deceptively, complex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love this album. Like, love this album.
My God, he gave it a 12.
This is a 10 out of 10.
Oh,
this
wow.
Is very first on the show, 10 out of 10.
Jenkins certified.
Because, so catchy, poignant lyrics that just really hit the nail on the head. I relate to a lot of what this album is singing about. I love how happy it can sound with completely depressing lyrics.
I'd like to
be you.
I love that song. That's actually a good song.
Like, there's not a lot to talk about, in my opinion, but there's just everything that's there is just so damn good. Done right. This is how you do it. 10 out of 10. I would listen to again and plan to.
the 10 is there, you know, if you would listen one more time, that's a 10. That's a 10.
Past the marbles in the clearing beneath the geese in flight, to the darkening river in the autumn light, where it touches down.
All right, I chose the 1987 album The Walking by Canadian musician Jane Siberry, and a little bit of background on this, because I think it's necessary.
I wish people could see how you turn. Anyone ever listens to this, I wish they could see how you turn to me.
So Jane Siberry, in the 80s, had a few pretty big new wave hits in Canada that didn't really have a whole lot of crossover elsewhere. Her record label, looking into it, it doesn't look like her records were printed in like England, so it looks like she was just over in Canada and the United States. But she was growing as a pop artist. She had some commercial and critical acclaim. This album, The Walking, was her first album on Reprise Records, and it marks a pretty noticeable shift, where before it was, you know, quirky and fun and very well written, but kind of standard new wave. This album it starts with a 9-minute long song. It's got touches of ambient pop. It's very, very progressive. The closest thing to this that I can think of would be maybe the Stranger albums by Kate Bush or artists like David Sylvian or Arthur Russell. But I do think that writing Jane Siberry off as like a Canadian Kate Bush is pretty wrong, because she does have a songwriting and lyrical style of her own, especially on this album. But this album, it came out, it was marketed a lot. She had this whole tour to support it. The label wanted her to get big, and it didn't happen because it was not a commercial success. This album is strange. This album is surreal. This album has long tracks. There's only one that's less than 6 minutes.
It's like 4 minutes, yeah.
It got critical attention.
The second track, right? No, Red High Heels is like 6.
No, Goodbye is the only song under 6 minutes.
Okay.
Red High Heels is about 7.5. Mm-hmm. So even though it had its poppy aspects, it also didn't get that much radio play because of the length of the tracks and how they can turn on a heel sometimes. And back in 1987, getting radio play was very, very important. So this album, a lot of things stacked against it. If it was printed in England, that maybe it would have had something, because maybe they would have really liked the sound of there, because there was quite a bit of a difference in the charts in America and in England at the time. But it kind of just faded away, and by the 90s, Siberry kind of faded into obscurity. I feel like maybe if the internet existed, if everyone had access to this album, there could be maybe this cult status. I feel like the people who do know it nowadays are very passionate about it. And that's part of the reason that I chose it, because a lot of the albums that I've chosen so far on this podcast, even if I think that they deserve more recognition, they already have some. This album I don't feel like has nearly the amount of recognition that it should have on any level whatsoever. So yeah, I absolutely adore this album, but I'll leave off on my rant for a moment, and which one of you would like to
I'll start. Okay. Jacob, wow. All right. So this is another one for me, like, first listen, I was like, okay. Second listen, I was like, okay. Then my third listen, I was like, oh, okay.
I told you it was a grower. I told you that it needs some
this,
detailed listens.
What a beautiful record. What a beautiful.
As soon as I heard the elements of Django Pop, I was like, oh.
I love it. Well. See, like, this is everything that is working with this album is everything that I want. It's catchy. Oh, I can't stress enough how beautiful this is.
I agree.
Her vocals are killer. But this, I love how it has that classic 80s pop
it
sound.
It works within the 80s pop cliches.
Reeks of 80s.
But it does little things here and there that distance it from, like, the normal
right.
stuff.
It works within that sound, but it creates something so artistic and progressive.
And completely, what a 180 from Down Colorful Hill, because the length just...
It's one of the quickest 55 hours.
Yeah,
5 minutes of music.
I'm blown away by how I listened to a nine minute track, and it felt like 3 minutes.
Yeah, the White Tent, the Raft could go on forever.
Oh my god, the White Tent, the Raft.
I love when the chorus starts. The intro to the album, the intro to that song is just this nice, quiet, beautiful guitar intro, and then when the first chorus comes in, the drums, and you're like, oh crap, here we go, and then it goes into this, like,
I like how there's
five or six different parts.
There's subtle guitars coming in and out. The drumming just makes the album just cool.
The arrangements are complex, but they're accessible, and they're always produced beautifully, and they're just.
It doesn't feel. That my problem with Down Colorful Hill was that, like, it got a little too repetitive at times, which made the length for me just a little too much to bear. This is the exact opposite. There's always a little something she's doing here and there that makes it interesting. It captures my attention again when it starts to get a little repetitive.
The tracks justify the length by changing it up.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And my only criticism is that a few times when they do something different musically, it's not weird, but it's a little jarring. Where I'm like...
It doesn't always work.
Like, it happens and I'm like, I do not like that.
Sometimes,
but then it gets...
Yeah.
But it doesn't overstay its welcome and it gets right back into, like, what I love. Like, that catchy just...
So lyrically, the songs are pretty in unison with one another, but sometimes the song, the way the playing switches is so kind of jarring for me that I kind of wish it was, like, it shouldn't be two different songs, because it's always taught, it's pretty cohesive lyrically, but, like, sometimes the switch-ups kind of make me feel, like, not good.
Now, I'm going to come off as a little, like, dumb here, but I looked at the lyrics, I listened to this many times. I don't know what the hell she's
okay.
talking about.
So let's talk
Please
about
Please explain what the hell is going on.
Lyrically, I really understood.
Like, this is more cryptic than, like, the Minutemen.
I really
don't know what she was talking about, but the music was just so beautiful, I could care less what she was singing about.
I catch themes on here.
It's more...
Oh, yeah,
But as it kind of... As we plot along, I kind of lose...
But, like, what the songs... And you... There's many songs where, if you look at the album, the record, the song title, you know what they're talking about.
Well, Lean Out is a White Table.
That's a great track.
It is.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my favorites. I think my absolute favorite is The White Tent, The Raft. But if you were to ask me what it's about, I would have no clue.
That's definitely one of the most cryptic.
Wrong answer, it's Red High Heels. That song is incredible. That
really?
Song. That song's.
I think the most beautiful is The Lobby.
That's my favorite song on the album right now.
Snap
Lobby.
That.
Well, you've cycled.
So yeah, I have. I've actually when I first listened to this album.
When was Red High Heels your favorite?
Because
I know it has.
Earlier on.
Okay.
Earlier on, I think every song on this album. I think this is a perfect album. This is a 10 out of 10. And I just need to talk about. Okay, I need to talk about the lyrics, I need to talk about the songwriting, I need to talk about so many things, because this album doesn't get talked about enough, and I feel like someone has to do it.
Go buy this album.
Oh,
you will not
God.
Be disappointed.
So,
be quick. What's old?
So the first time I listened to this album, I did love it immediately. My favorite track was The White Tent, The Raft.
Jangle.
It just sounded beautiful.
Oh,
I agree.
As soon as I heard that guitar, I was like, Lindbergh.
Yeah, so, but the more I listened to it, it is definitely a grower, because the more you listen to it, the more those, like, turn on a heel kind of moments.
Sense.
They make a little bit more sense. You get all of the details because there is a very, very detailed album.
Yeah, the production on here is pretty slick. There's a lot of little subtle things.
There are quite a bit. And especially near the end of the album, I want to talk about how it ends. The last two tracks, The Lobby and The Bird in the Gravel. The Lobby being about 6.5, The Bird in the Gravel being the longest track here, about 10.5 minutes.
I thought it was like 12. That song's really experimental.
I agree. And both of them are very ambient. Both of them are among the quietest songs in the album. And when I first listened to this album, maybe the first three or four times, I've probably heard this 15-ish times at this point. I listened to it again this morning.
I actually didn't have time. I was trying to listen to both of them again this morning.
Before you get going, like, the best way to describe this type of record, and you may disagree with me, but like, hear me out. This is like what Rush was doing. They were using that sound that was popular at the time, but was doing some incredibly experimental, long tracks where... It's like, it was fine for radio, but it was just so long and different. So you have Jane here coming
Ingrid
in
and
with...
Footman.
It was released as a single, she shortened it, and it was on the radio.
It was.
So you have Jane coming in here with the same kind of thing, but it's using the sound of the 80s. But
it's like Kate Bush doing that, and it's like David Sylvian doing that, it's like Arthur Russell doing that. It's like Mark Almond doing that. There's definitely more to... You know, if you write something like this off as an 80s pop record, you're really... Not realizing
you're
not part of the
surface level.
Yeah, you're not paying enough attention.
But even if you go in listening it for that, you're gonna enjoy what you hear because it's as classic 80s as it get. But if you go in deeper, you're gonna find much more to
love.
It's
like a strange dream world. It's like a surreal, weird David Lynch movie, lyrically and musically. And I think to talk about the lyrics for a moment.
Lyrically especially.
Lyrically, it's very cryptic a lot. I think that if you're looking for moments where she specifically lays out to you how she's feeling or what she's talking about, you're not going to get
lost,
them.
Buddy.
It's mostly a mixture of strange imagery and themes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are core themes that come up on this. This is a breakup album.
I agree. God, you're so smart. Because I only hear that in Red High Heels and Goodbye.
It's in Goodbye. It's also in The Walking.
I
know nothing that will...
I just couldn't understand.
It's also in the title track. It's probably most explicit in the title track, I think.
Red High Heels helped me... I thought it was most explicit.
I love how both your, Jacob, yours and mine album are the exact same thing, but one is... pretty blunt with what it's about, and the other is like as
and
subtle.
This one is different because
Sunberries is more harrowing.
Yeah,
I think.
Get Lost is deep in the denial phase. This is more about acceptance. This album is late on. This album
and
is
the
her
music
saying,
portrays that too.
It does. This album is her saying like goodbye. Like it's a goodbye.
Yes.
And you know like
it's
on The Walking and I know nothing will bring you back.
That's as blunt as it's
going to
get, folks.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that just kind
of. The lyrics are part of what made songs like The Lobby and The Bird in the Gravel, the last two. That's what really... When I started getting into the lyrics on those two tracks, that's when they really came through with me, especially The Lobby. So The Lobby is very, very quiet. It's kind of like this conversation. You have Jane Siberry's lone vocal, and then it's kind of a back and forth between that and like a choir of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this strange, surreal argument, like, put down that chair. No, I won't do it.
Like, it's just like, I went to the lobby.
Yeah.
Then I went upstairs.
Yeah, but like, it's like, and then at one point she leaves and has this moment where she's just contemplating. And then she comes back and it's like a totally different thing. She is now in control. She's denying, she's in control of the argument. The music reflects this. Everything gets happier. Her vocals get more impassioned. And I get chills every time because I'm realizing this song it's a weird, surreal story, but it's also about asserting your own independence.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, and that's another theme that's on this album is...
Like, I don't care what you think.
Individualism.
Yeah.
It's about being just who you are and asserting that.
And I don't think it comes off as selfish or
not at all.
Indulgent, which is a problem I had with Get Lost.
It's more of just a self-empowering kind of thing. And considering it in the aftermath of a breakup, when half of the album is about empowering yourself and half of the album is about just accepting a loss... Sometimes they go together. All those themes are never very concrete. There are even moments in tracks that are totally cryptic. where she just throws in these kind of stream of consciousness lyrics. I thought it was okay until they asked me, but now I don't know, which is in The Walking. Mm-hmm. Like, she'll throw in these, like, little lines where it's like she's trying to convince herself of something. Mm-hmm. And she just tosses them in with all of these weird, cryptic, surreal, Lynchian...
It's like a moment of dreamism.
Right. It's like... It's just such an interesting...
I really applaud Jane Saberi for this because, like, for me, if the lyrics don't catch me, then I'm going to fall back on your music. And if the music's not there, then, like, we're in deep trouble.
The opposite. I need the music to be interesting first.
I'm with Brian on this one, but I think both are...
I mean, because, like,
the first thing I'm going to want to know is, like, what are you trying to tell me?
The music under the message is garbage, the music is garbage. That's how I've always
operated. But so, like, it's like my problem with the Minutemen. Like, I couldn't understand what he was talking about, so I fall back on the music, and the music would just at moments be like, ooh, not me. Not for me, man. But this is the exact opposite. Like, I am a huge 80s guy. This 80s sound is my bread and butter. I love that I don't even have to listen to what she's talking about. I can just enjoy this beautiful music.
And that's, I think, honestly, like, this album was at a 9 for me for a while, just based on the music. Like, absolutely adored it. And then when I finally started, like, realizing what the album is about and how all of the musical moments amplify the message. Like, for example, I think my least favorite song on here, even though I still love it, is Goodbye, track 3. However, that also has one of my favorite individual moments on the entire album when the piano and the drums come in and she just gives this impassioned vocal performance that gives me chills. And I didn't realize what it was about because I didn't really pay attention to the lyrics too much. It's just like an argument between, like, a customer and a server at a restaurant. Like asking for a table for one, and then, like, it's just strange. And then she's just giving it her all in that moment.
She is at a 10 the whole time.
And not all the time. Like,
performance-wise.
She knows how to, like, for example, The Bird and the Gravel. On that song, a lot of it is very, very quiet and ambient, and she's giving this very subtle, almost whispered vocal performance. But by the end of the album, by the end of that song, everything picks up and there's this incredible climax. And vocally, she just goes for it. And I feel like if she vocally went for it every single moment on this album, it wouldn't be as impactful as it is. Mm-hmm. Like, she knows how to utilize dynamics and let the quiet moments be very quiet and contemplative. But also, on the other side of the coin, let the loud moments be extremely just amazing.
So I'm going to complain. The opener track is very good to start, but honestly, about halfway through the track, I feel like it runs out of steam. And the change-up on here doesn't really do a whole lot for me other than make me wish I was on to the next track. I feel like the song does everything it's going to do very early on. It's a very enjoyable song, and a pretty good start to the album, I'll say. But I think the change midway through the track doesn't really do a whole lot for me or do a lot to anything but to extend the track. Red High Heels is amazing. This is where the narrative became clear to me. I love you can feel her go transition from scene to scene. It's kind of it's very conceptual, kind of from going from this wedding scene to her in a dress walking up down the aisle to walking through a parking lot. And the lyric that where I look up and the streetlights are very bright. It's awesome. It's like she's come out of this self-imposed illusion that things were how they once were, like to the happiest moment of when she's wedding to someone she really loved to when they're gone now, be that through death or divorce or what have you. For me, that was a very powerful moment. I think it illustrates things with the bare minimum lyrical attribution to convey the scene. Musically, it's amazing as well. I love the little vocal free in the birds and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like the way it's pitched. Goodbye is okay. Like it more than when I originally was listening to it, but
I think it sets up the next track perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why
the little pan flute, the dark kind of little pan flute thing going into
Ingrid in the Footman is like my least favorite track on here.
I disagree. That's a great track.
This track bothers me. It's like I find it to be kind of incessant. Like I don't really.
You don't like the yada yadis?
I don't really like the yada yadis.
I love the yada yadis.
I'm not totally into the yada yadis. I gotta say, and
I think it has one of the best musical breakdowns and outros.
Musically, the album's pretty solid. It's just I don't think the musical. I just don't.
I think that's the last track, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Really?
One of the best
has moments.
The last track
quiets down.
Yeah.
When like You can keep going.
I love the composition of the last track as well. Lena is a White Table is a banger. It's awesome.
I can't really describe
why I love this track. I guess the absurdity of it all makes me.
And I wrote happy. I wrote down in my notes, like, every track on the album, the moment the chorus comes in is just a powerful shift.
The way in my opinion,
she really lets the verses and the choruses
do their own thing. The freeing vocal on a goodbye, that first, like, goodbye, it's not even really on pitch, but I really do enjoy
it. It's the first moment of, like,
chaos,
a darkness,
honestly,
on
yeah.
this album. Yeah.
I think,
especially coming after Red High Heels, the poppiest song. Yeah.
Towards the end of the album as well, The Walking is a good song as well, but for Lobby and the Bird and the Gravel, they are very quiet. Well, I do like the progressions on Bird and the Gravel and how it kind of plays with you a little bit as you're going out of the album. It spits the album as a closer, and with you telling me about kind of the themes and what the album is about, if that were to be true, I would I could appreciate them more in retrospect. Instrumentally, the album's really solid. Lyrically cryptic, but still satisfying, I think, because the vocal performances are pretty compelling. After the first two tracks, there's a bit of a lull for me, but then I think it's... And then Lena's The White Table is a fantastic track, and I think it's pretty consistent throughout to the end. I just didn't find myself falling in love with many tracks past Red High Heels. I was enjoying them, and I was having a good time trying to understand maybe what they meant, but they didn't really blow me away.
That's not a slight
against this album. I just heard a joke the other day about it was like Jerry Seinfeld was like, that's a thing now. People say, it didn't blow me away. It's like, it doesn't have to. And I would use that here. Just
see, that was me.
But
Brian's saying that was me my first listen. I was like, it was okay, but then I listened to it more. I was like, okay, now I'm getting it. This is still pretty damn solid.
Good album. I think the song writing is maybe the weakest factor for me, just because the way things progress isn't always interesting, and sometimes I feel like the tracks are long.
I kind of agree. I'm not a fan of cryptic lyricism.
I don't mind cryptic. It's not the lyricism. It's the way the songs progress. The way they swell into the chorus is really.
Oh, you mean the structure?
The structure. Like, and sometimes the irregular length of verse to verse. Like, the verses aren't always as long as the last, which is fine. I'm not saying that is inherently bad, but I'm saying on this album, it didn't really work for me. I've been like a 7 on this thing. It's pretty good. I enjoy the concept. I enjoy the lyrics. The track changes honestly hurt the most for me. Like these instrumental change-ups that I feel like just serve to lengthen the song sometimes.
For me...
And especially the Ingrid really hurts this album for me. That's a very... Like every time I get to it, I don't feel like it's essential or anything on the album.
That was at one point one of my favorites.
Yeah, I really never totally enjoyed this track.
For me...
Don't let Brian get you down.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Maybe even... I can even say...
Again. So he's talking about structure. I like the structure. The length does not at all fight against it for me.
Honestly, I want to say... I think that thinking about all my complaints about it, I would say this thing's like on the same level as Get Lost. It's the strongest 6 I could feel. You know what I mean? It's not quite a 7 for me. There's just too many things that I don't enjoy.
And that's fair. And that was me on my first listen, but the more I listened to it, even if I still didn't understand what she was singing about, the music is so good.
I agree.
9 out of 10 for me. Love this album. My biggest complaint is, and it's just nitpicks, really. The lyrics are cryptic, but understanding it now, that helps me. But there's still moments in the album where musically, she'll do little things there. I'm like, I did not like that. Like, at all. But she doesn't. But what turns it around is that she doesn't stay on too long and goes right back to what I love. Just little moments throughout the album where it's like, why'd you do that? But you went back. Good. We're cool. So 9 out of 10. Beautiful album. Probably the best you've done so far, Jacob. Love this.
I absolutely adore this album. I was at like a 9 the first time I listened to it, and then I listened
on the
to it.
First listen.
Yeah, I honestly was, and I kept listening to it, and the more I listened to it, even now, the better it gets, and once you just keep getting into all of the details and the lyrics and the songwriting, the Bird and the Gravel, I get chills every time, because when it finally comes back, when there's that long kind of ambient stretch, about the 5-minute mark.
That's strong, it's good. Awesome.
And then at about 3 minutes left, that bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo guitar comes back, and it just starts to build. And then her vocals get louder, and then it just all just explodes into this like cathartic release, and that it's sequenced so well. This whole album flows. Even the tracks that even Goodbye, which isn't my favorite track in the world, the way that it transitions into the next track The way everything just flows together mm-hmm. as a holistic album listening experience is fantastic to me. I think this album is incredibly underrated. I feel like a lot of people, if they listen to it,
pick this album up.
Like, if you're a fan of Kate Bush, if you're a fan of, like, progressive pop in general,
or just that 80s music, like that classic 80s music, that alone will sell. You'll be sold on this album with it because it's so good.
I think that this needs to be talked about. It makes me sad that it wasn't. It makes me sad that there wasn't, like, an infrastructure in the music industry in place for this to even possibly be. Get, like, a cult classic status. Like, I feel like if this album was rediscovered on the internet, you know, like, and if it really started catching on, that it could be talked about a lot more than it is, and it makes me sad that it isn't, but I get to listen to it, so that's a good thing.
Would you give it a 10 out of 10?
I would give it a 10, and that's a very recent thing, and I don't give out, like, 10s to new albums. Like, most of the albums that I consider
albums,
10 out of 10.
Albums that you have listened to recently being new.
Right.
This is a 1985 release.
This is 87.
87.
And I discovered this in, like, April.
Right.
And
so this is recent. This is really recent.
Yeah, and, like, like almost every other.
How'd you discover the album? How'd you
Like, Rate Your Music. Just
looking at chart. Yeah, you go through chart. I mean, Rate Your Music is amazing because I can finally listen to Gabber. Like, you can't find Gabber tracks anywhere on the internet. You go to Rate Your Music charts for Gabber, and it's like, here it is.
I think I made a custom chart, and it was 80s progressive pop because I really enjoyed David Sylvian and Arthur Russell and those artists. And this album was there. It was relatively high up. So I gave it a shot. It was on Spotify, and it's definitely one of those lost classic kind of things.
Might I add, the best way to listen to this music is while driving on the interstate. Beautiful. Just everything passing by you is, ooh, this music. If there's an instrumental version of this album, I would listen to it too. Like, I can't get enough of this instrumentation. So beautiful. Great job, Jacob. Great job.
You let me down.
Great job, Jan Saveri. Screw you, Brian.
No.
Now we get to talk about your album.
No, he hates it. That's a one.
Pony. Boy.
So, my album is an album from this year from a more well-known as a producer, but this album got pretty good critical reception this year. Going by the moniker of Sophie. She's a transgender producer as an architect of a new genre, what I believe that can be defined as a new genre coming out of the 2010s, known as bubblegum bass, which is this very distorted, you know, these very distorted, deep, you know, sharp in a way, kind of bass lines or EDM bass beats over top of extremely exaggerated or manipulated feminine vocal qualities, like very high-pitched points you're hearing on here. That is what is defines part of bubblegum bass. I love it because this genre it's really new, it's relatively unexplored, and she began exploring these sounds when she was producing for many, many people, most notably Vince Staples, I think, in 2017 with Big Fish Theory, where you can hear on songs like Yeah Right and 745 this crushing, just so loud. I thought my speakers were broken. Initially, I thought it had just blown them out. And her little vocal interlude on the track, Yeah Right, off of that album, which I think is very compelling. It has this very, it's not chipmunk-esque, I would say it's like, it's squeaky, but you can hear it's pulled up. It sounds kind of like underwater, I guess, a little bit. I don't know, I have a hard time describing it. It's a very new sound for me. I enjoy it a lot, and I don't really think, I think I've heard it anywhere else in my very limited musical experience. But, this album came out this year, 2018, is a three of these, the first three tracks were singles that were released throughout the year, which were added onto this project, and then the tracks from Face Shopping, from after Face Shopping on, were all kept on the album. This came out June of this year, I believe.
What's the album called, Brian?
The album is called Pearls of...
Oils
of Every Pearls on Insides, I think. Yeah. I've forgotten the name.
Oil of Every Pearls on Insides.
Yeah, very strange name for a very strange album. Yeah, I forgot the name of the release because I'm just so familiar with it. I've been looking at it forever. She's been my profile picture in Discord forever now. The album cover was my PC wallpaper for a very long time. I adore this thing. This is like one of the most exciting things to come out of music in the past like 3 years where I've been actively listening. Like, it's just incredible. It's so groundbreaking. It's foreign as well. I understand it's not for everyone, but it's for someone like me, this album is amazing. It blows me away every time I hear it. But Chaz, go ahead. I just want to know.
Chaz is making a face, right?
Brian,
now.
Well, first off, I don't want to disappoint you, but it's the sound is not groundbreaking.
It's a three.
You need to listen to more Aphex Twin, because he was doing stuff like this in the 90s that with this like very rapid, hard, distorted, jagged style beats. Mm-hmm. But I can tell.
Do you think he's done any? I've not heard. I know of Aphex Twin. I haven't heard any personally. Do you think the vocal performances are anything close to what's on this album?
Well, he's more instrumental. But like, I could if Sophie came out and said one of my biggest influences is Aphex Twin, I believe. I wouldn't be surprised. So if you like this,
I think the aspects of this that are groundbreaking.
Because you can see it.
It's not the beats and how they're structured, it's how they're produced.
Right.
Well, no, produced-wise...
Yeah, I failed to say that.
I think the way that it's produced is what makes it so
the whole time I got an Aphex Twin vibe. Would you agree, Jacob?
I would say...
Because there were moments where I was like, I've heard this him do something like this before. That's just me.
I think that the way that the songs are crafted is probably... Like, the songwriting is a bit similar sometimes, not even close to all the time. I think that the way that these tracks are produced, the way that the bass is produced...
I mean, I'm talking about, like, the sounds and the way they're utilized is something I've heard before. But there are definitely songs in this that I have never heard before that...
Just talk about them.
Brian, are you okay? Do you need to talk?
This is...
Do you need like, someone
album,
to hug you?
This album makes me feel okay. Makes me feel okay.
All right, let's go into what I like. Interesting electronic work. I love the sound. I like I said, I'm a huge Aphex Twin
it's
fan. So when I hear something like this, I'm like, ooh, this is like... Mm-hmm. I love... I never give electronica enough credit how it means musically. Because like, I'm always more of a rock guy. But my electronic side is vast and... I'm always looking for new stuff.
I enjoy the influence of electronica more than electronica.
I just love electronica.
But this album, I think...
And this is nothing I've ever heard before to its core. I've just heard elements of this and, like, have been done before.
I think that's how music progression works.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not ever going to come out with a genre that's totally...
The vocal performances is... That's been a running theme. Damn good vocals.
They go from being, like... Kind of like It's Okay to Cry, you get this very like ASMR-esque kind of like very quiet but powerful vocal delivery. On Pony Boy, you get a very sexual take, and then you get to the first verse of Pony Boy, and you're not even really sure.
Are you mean face shopping?
No, I'm not. Even, you're not. Okay. You know there's lyrics on Pony Boy. Do you know that is Sophie. That I didn't know that the first time I listened. I didn't know on face shopping was
this album is kind of catchy and danceable. Like
the first few tracks, especially I think in Immaterial as well.
All right. So you keep mentioning Pony Boy. That was one of my favorite songs.
Yes, it's awesome. God, it's so
good. What a weird
Pony Boy. It makes me feel
lock up
weird.
The door, put the pony on all fours, crack down the whip, make the pony bite the bit.
The best lyric on that is, spit on my face, put the pony in his place. That made me... The first time I heard that, I was like...
Pony Boy.
It's a great song.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I would love... This is like a great album of like... Live performance of this is phenomenal.
Sophie Live doesn't look interesting. It's just... Right. It's a DJ.
You know,
you can't perform that vocal.
If you like Pony Boy, you should listen to Sex Dwarf by, what's the name of the band? That album is Soft Cell. They did Tainted Love. They have some, their album is Nonstop Erotic Cabaret.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can totally see that being an influence on this album. 100%.
But
what'd you think of It's Okay to Cry?
I like it as an opener.
That was like, that's my least favorite song.
Oh, really? Okay. That's
my least. It was too poppy. When I heard it, I was like.
You don't love that, like, that explosion at the end?
No, like, because it was just so cliche.
Really?
I was like, ooh, what the hell is this? Not a good opener.
It's
the black sheep of the bunch, which is odd because this whole album is a black sheep, but it did not fit. To go from that song to Pony Boy, that was like whiplash like no other. Honestly, if Pony Boy was the opener, that would have that's the opener. I don't know why.
So I disagree.
It's not a bad song. It's just like,
well, when we talk more about conceptually what I feel like this album is about, I could maybe try to rationalize why that's.
Yeah, and yeah. I think
You read my review.
Yeah, it's it's my least favorite song on the album for different reasons.
Oh, really?
Okay. It is, okay.
But so it's not your favorite either?
No. Whoa. I wouldn't remove it from the album.
Okay. I'd remove it. That's
I would not,
we,
not at all.
We disagree.
I think that lyrically, it's very, very poignant. I think that, honestly, my biggest issue with the song is nothing to do with the themes or the lyrics.
Oh, yeah, meaning the lyrics are great.
I don't think that musically it's nearly as interesting as the rest of the album.
Yeah, that's...
I do really appreciate, like, because those are Sophie's vocals. And that's the only track on the whole album, I think, where she's
pretty,
taking the lead vocals and just, like, singing through the...
They're pretty bare bones, comparatively.
Yeah. And I feel like it's definitely an emotional moment, and the track did grow on me a little bit, but I don't think musically it's as...
It's the most song of the bunch.
Oh my god!
Works against
but I think as an opener to the album, it definitely sets up the themes that are going to be on the album pretty well.
I think it's like a reverse closer, because...
Right.
Because
I agree. If this was a closer, that would have worked.
This song is
that
like
more
coming
sense.
To terms with the themes on the album, or like coming to terms with the turmoil this album alludes to in some of the subject matter.
Let's talk about my favorite track, Immaterial. What a banger.
Yeah, I need to know.
It's everyone's favorite. It's my favorite.
Really? It's not. It's like maybe top four.
It's so catchy. It's
I love
that beat. I love that vocals. I'm picking up that song. I'm buying that song.
Man, favorite on this thing right now, like gun to my head, is It Cold in the Water.
That's a great track.
Blows me
track.
Away every single time it comes on.
I love the vocals.
Amazing. I don't under, like, oh man, the way it just goes forever.
So for everyone to know, before this episode, Brian kept telling me, like, if there's a song in this album that if you don't like, we are not friends.
It's
anymore.
Is It Cold. Do you like that song?
I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite.
That's fine.
My favorite is Immaterial,
I knew
Pony
that.
Boy, and Pretending. I really like Pretending.
Whoa, the
what
drone
a,
cut.
What a...
You like the drone cut.
Well, no, because I love instrumental electronic music.
You did... There's no... I was like, he's gonna
it's
hate
it's very
me.
Cinematic. It's
wow.
very,
it's so...
Oh.
It's so beautiful.
This is like
it
the
is
best amazing. Case scenario.
This... That
hey,
song...
I like drone albums.
That's why...
Yeah,
like,
I knew you'd be fine.
Like in your last Purple album cover... Very Slave Hymns.
Steel and Ardor, Stranger Fruit.
Right.
I loved the instrumentals in there, and that was your guys' least favorite parts.
Right.
I am I love electronic music like that. Pretending is a beautiful song.
God, that's
beautiful.
A good opinion. Such a good opinion.
Beautiful track. That's like, I'm mesmerized. Songs that make me feel like I'm floating
Woo.
In space are my jam.
You do love Aphex Twin Ambient Part 2, so that shouldn't be surprising to us.
God!
Which I'm going to pick eventually.
So,
you all need to experience Aphex Twin.
I mean, I have, just not that album.
Yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, this is a great album. But Immaterial is like the most accessible moment on the album, easily. It's an EDM pop banger. It's catchy, it's quirky, it's cute, it's happy, it's upbeat, It's the most conventional moment on the whole album.
My
I love that song goes into Whole New World.
Immaterial. Now, yeah.
Whole New World.
I don't like Whole New World at all.
Oh, bad opinion.
Great.
Bad opinion.
Chaz, you've lost all credibility.
No,
nope,
it's got,
great.
You can't.
No, because that's... Look, my biggest problem is that sometimes the sound is too much for me. It's
right.
too much for me.
It's oh no, it's extremely busy.
Like,
that track especially is noisy.
Like, that song... Whole New World, I'm like... Just nothing about it musically, I'm like... Ugh. I just don't enjoy it.
I think at first, for someone like me, if I... It didn't happen on first listen, sounds great. But, like, I think a criticism in another life I may have had would have been the beginning sounds too...
One of my notes I wrote...
But I don't think that. But I can see someone thinking that.
One of my notes I wrote, these damn kids and their newfangled music. That's that. Like, there's just some things about this, like, it's just not for me.
I think if there's any sort of...
But the good outweighs the bad, like...
I think the only in quotes weak moment on the album is a moment that doesn't go over totally perfectly, but one that I love to bits is Infatuation into Not Okay.
I don't care.
I don't care for infatuation
either.
I love Infatuation. Not Okay kind of just it's a good transfer into Pretending. I think going from
I like the most aggressive distorted bass on the album going into the
exactly. It's awesome.
Kind of reminds me of the sequencing on Nine Inch Nails' Downward Spiral.
What did you think about that vocal break on Face Shopping?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like,
very, very,
Pony
very
Boy and Face Shopping are like just, it should have been just one whole track. They just go into each other. It's just,
the way it goes, I mean, it literally plays out into it. It's so deliberate.
I mean,
see,
that's the stuff I liked. Like,
yeah.
It's Holman World, the instant it starts, I'm just like...
It's a double track, essentially. Holman World, Pretend World.
Not care for it. But I guess the themes about it are not something to, like...
I could listen to the album on loop forever, because the end of Pretend World into It's Okay to Cry would be such, like... if you had It's Okay to Cry at the end of the track list, I don't think the album loses anything, because I think Pony Boy would still be a good energetic opener.
That's a great...
I actually really like how it subverts itself immediately.
Right.
I feel like, you know, who is this Sophie person? They've produced for someone I like. You listen to It's Okay to Cry.
You're like, it's an art pop album.
Okay, and then Pony Boy comes on. Like, I would love... I hope that's happened to someone.
It happened to me. The whiplash was in...
But what's important, jarring. What's important is... You like Pony Boy. That's important. That's a great thing.
That's a hilariously amazing song.
So the themes on this album, there are clear elements, in my opinion, of exploring a new self on this album. And I think that's a super compelling subject.
And that ties in with the song of exploring
and
this
new self. And it
explores
each feeling of that thing. So we explore, and Pony Boy would get, you know, feeling sexually powerful about, you know, your new self with Sophie being transgender, I think. It ties in.
What a great theme we've built here, where each of our songs, the music ties in with what they're singing about. How mine were the...
They're all like weird pop albums.
Yeah, but they're all weird pop albums, but each like...
They're all pop
albums,
Jacob's, a little more to them.
Yeah. Like in Jacob's, that beautiful, uplifting music flows in with what she's singing about accepting what has happened to her. How mine, that lo-fi synth, ties in with that deep isolation feeling and like bitterness. And how Brian's this powerful, like, I am...
Well, the strength of...
I am kinky and I am proud of it.
Yeah.
Is like,
and then, like,
fits with that...
On Face Shopping, talking about, like, I love the lyrics on this thing. It's like, you know, artificial bloom.
Oh yeah, with
amazing line.
Without my legs or my hair, without my jeans or my blood, with no name and with no type of story, where do I live? Tell me, where do I exist?
It, kind of tying into this non, you know, immaterial things and attaching yourself to those. Is it cold in the water? God, what a conceptually perfect track. It's so good. It takes this simple concept of stepping into new waters and, you know, literally exploring new waters. And rephrases it as, is it cold in the water? Is this change shocking? Is this too new? Is it too much at once? Are your hairs on end? And just on the way it's arranged musically elevates this simple vocal line that is beautifully sung and modulated to, it's so beautiful.
I agree.
And none of it is authentic. None of it could have been made in any other year except the year of our Lord, 2018.
I agree. That's what I'm saying.
It is a brilliant modern song. It's the best modern song I've heard. It's the best song that could only exist in this era that I've ever heard. Off of this album, yes. Out of everything I've heard this year, yes. Out of anything I've heard that's existed in the 2010s, that's even, you know, avant-garde, experimental, etc., and so on. Absolutely. Nothing comes close to this track. God, it's so good. Infatuation.
I would agree.
Infatuation's a cooldown.
I've never heard anything like this before.
It takes the convention.
I've heard songs with elements of like this, with this sound and this type of beat work. Like, again, Aphex Twin.
Right. It's just so... But like, I don't know. I feel like I will just go listen to these other artists, and my expectation... I feel like I've heard one of, if not the best
thing. This is God tier.
It takes a conventional music thing. Take this metaphor that I really enjoy, or like, you know, it's like this one lyrical line that stands out, which many, many tracks that everyone, you know, anyone that loves a track has lyrical standout moments on it. If not, they love the whole track.
Yeah.
But this is more or less one line that's repeated throughout the track over and over. It serves as a drone at some points over a melody. And it's just so flawless. Taking that conventional music thing of this metaphor, this one line I'm really attached to, and turning it into not a chorus, but part of the instrumentation on the track, which is, I don't know how she does it, because it just fits perfectly. There's no other instrumental you can put under this song.
We have a great example here. If someone, like, years from now, people are going to look back on this album and say, like, some person just woke up one day and thought of this.
This is like new music. This is, like...
We're experiencing something...
The way we exist right now, you know what I mean? That, like, we would have any other, you know...
This is a future classic.
I don't... Yeah, yeah, exactly.
In the electronic world of Daft Punk, Aphex Twin, this album is going to be, like, one of the greats.
I want to talk about the last two tracks and I want to hand it over to Jacob. Infatuation and Not Okay, for me, are kind of a transfer moment. Infatuation is better. Not Okay is kind of just the chaos begins. Because as we get to the tail end of the album, things just spiral out of control. Infatuation is another cute little ballad kind of thing. It's like, I want to know who you are inside and stuff. Like, just kind of coming to, like, who is that within me? Kind of that feeling, which is cool. Not Okay, like I said, into Pretending, an amazing drone cut. Kind of more ambient at times, I think. Man, just the way the noises come together on this track is very perfect. And kind of the, it's a beautiful contrast when you compare it to Whole New World. But I'm glad the material's in the middle here to break it up. Kind of, it serves, like, if we're talking about thematically, Pretending maybe goes better into Whole New World, but I kind of don't want to hear 20 minutes of, you know, extended drone ambient in that way. Or maybe I do. But I think Immaterial breaks it up in a way that helps the album way more than it could have ever heard it.
Yeah.
And then you go into Whole New World, and, like, by the end of that track, I just every noise is so intriguing, and the way it's arranged over one another is enthralling. Jacob.
Well, I can't follow that very well, but I will say that this album is fantastic. It's going to be one of my favorites of the year. It's not going to be my absolute favorite. I don't adore it at the level.
Poor opinion.
I don't adore it at the level that you do.
It's okay.
Brian.
I had a poor opinion earlier. It's fine.
But I do think that this album, there have been elements of this sound before, but this album is put together in a way, and it's high profile enough, and it's been impactful enough already, that I feel like it's the kind of thing that 10 years from now, when we look at music that's been influenced by it, maybe this it isn't being considered a classic immediately, but it's going to be one that we look back on for sure.
At least in the electronic world of music.
Yeah, and I think that...
No question.
Like, the whole PC music record label, I think that this is going to be... This is like the shape of electronic to come. If we've got the shape of jazz to come... Back in 59, and we've got the shape of punk to come, and 98-ish, this could be, this album's an alternate title, could be the shape of electronic to come, I think.
This is a 10, this is a definitive 10, I've never questioned it.
Brian is laying down, like, halfway across the room.
I don't even ever have to listen to music again, really, you know? Oh. It's so good.
I give this a solid 8 out of 10.
I'm with you there. I'm on an 8.
There's just a few songs where I'm like, I don't care. Man,
just unreal when I shot my face. Oh, we're done talking about it. Podcast is over. Now I just get to riff for like 40 minutes.
Well, let's talk about what we have in store for next. It's another themed episode.
Is this the chaos episode?
We are doing we were originally going to call it like noise albums, but to broaden the spectrum a bit, unhinged albums. Albums that are very noise influenced, but they, when you listen to it, you feel like the album is falling apart in any...
You feel like the album... These albums are not people that you want to meet in a dark alley at night.
Yeah, and we're going to have a special guest, a good friend of ours, Tillman Johnson, on as a...
Who has the worst pick.
Yes, absolutely, and he would agree. I'll speak for him. He is doing Metal Machine Music by Lou Reed. Oh boy. I'm doing Ween's debut, one of my favorite albums, favorite bands of all time, too, God, Ween, Satan. Jacob, what are you doing?
I'm going to choose an obscure album by the Drones, The Miller's Daughter. They have a lot more high-profile albums, and this is probably not a good album to start with the Drones, but,
well,
man.
Here we go.
Brian, what are you picking?
You guys have heard this. I'm pretty sure Tilden's heard it. I'm going to force myself to listen to Trout Mask Replica because I think it's the definition of, like...
This is a lot to take in one week.
This is the worst week ever.
All of... Like, my album's an hour long.
Mine's an hour long.
Is like 6 to 7. Trout Mask is like 75 minutes.
Yep.
Yours is an hour, so this is...
All right, well...
This has been Unwarranted Music Opinions. Join us again next time where we...
We'll be much more miserable.
Yeah, this album was very positive.
I'm glad we did this going into the next one, because I did enjoy these listens. I was pretty harsh on it, but I did like these albums.
I really loved pretty much everything we heard.
Me too.
Thanks for tuning in.